Well, hot damn. Here we are. We are back with the Lane 8 BMX podcast. And, ooh, man, I got a hot shoe here today. His name is Sean Wade. Y'all know who he is. Alpha Factory Team, cruiser man out of Illinois. He rips it up on the national scene. Sean, I want to say thank you for allowing me to spend some time with you and get to know you.
Well, I appreciate the invite to come on the show. I don't really know what I'm doing here after looking at the list of names of some of the other riders that have been on the podcast. I don't really know that I fit in. So,
nah, you're perfectly fine, my brother. I wouldn't ask you if I didn't want you.
Okay. Appreciate that.
You got it, man. You got it. So here's my first question to you. When did you get into BMX, and did you know right away it was your sport?
So I didn't start racing until I was 15, actually. And my journey to get to BMX, obviously took a while. So, I was born into a family that raced flat track motorcycles.
Wow.
So I got my first motorcycle for my fifth birthday. I was riding, bicycles, when I was younger, but my immediate focus, I grew up at racetracks. Watching my dad race, my uncle race, my grandpa raced, my aunt raced. That was the start of my my two-wheel journey there was with motorcycles. So I raced flat track from age 5 till 10, maybe.
Wow.
Anytime something's got a motor, it's expensive. It's very expensive. Couldn't really do it anymore. After racing motorcycles, I played some stick and ball sports for a number of years, played some football, played some baseball. But I had always, even still, ridden bikes, just around the neighborhood. That's, how it was back in the 90s, kids rode bikes and that's, we hung out. And, I remember we would set up, milk crates with plywood and make little jumps, and things like that. So always kind of, always ridden bikes, always, enjoyed it. And my old neighborhood, we didn't live too far from the BMX track, where Rockford is, in the park, but far enough where it took some years for me to get older to venture out that far. And so I remember going to Rockford, when I was much younger, but going just, when a race wasn't happening. And then, back then it was like the gates were open. So then you could just go ride the track, but I had no idea about racing, what any of it was, what any of it meant. It was just, hey, we're going to go ride and we're on the bike path. And then you are riding on the bike path and the bike path ends, at Searles Park and there's the track. And okay. And so you do a couple little whatever laps and then, back on the bike path and go back home. So it took a while to actually get to the point to where, oh, this is a sport. They hold races here. You got to get a membership and you need a helmet and all this kind of thing. And I don't remember even, because it's been 21 years ago now. I don't even really remember how that started, where it was like, okay, I'm going to race BMX. I think when I was in fifth grade, I had a friend that raced. And I remember I went and stayed the night at his house one night and we went up to Elkhorn the next day. Mm-hmm. And so again, I was exposed to it and I think I was maybe 12 or 13 then. And, but didn't really like hook into it.
Yeah.
So it took, a little bit of a journey to get to the point of, okay, I'm going to get a membership and race and sign up.
Yeah.
But yeah, started Mother's Day 2001. I was 15, and that was my first race. And here we are 21 years later.
Wow, not bad. So tell me this. When you started, how were you on the track? Because I know it's one thing to ride around the neighborhood, but it's a different thing to get on a track.
Man, I don't know. I mean, I think I got my novice wins relatively quickly, I think. I mean, like, again, this has been 21 years ago, and I don't remember national races from 3-4 years ago, let alone, you know, the first year I started. But I just – so it's always funny to me. So everybody knows me as, you know, oh, you race cruiser. You know what? Yeah. For the first – 15 years that I raced, I only raced 20 inch.
Wow.
I never raced cruiser. I had always ridden 20 inch. So I started on a 20 inch. And so the bike that I actually started on my first race season was a frame that I had gotten from my uncle. And I didn't know anything about it.
Yeah.
But instead of having a solid bar top tube, there were two top tubes, and it went and it looped behind the seat, and it's a Kuwahara.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. And it's like a trickster frame. I had no idea. I rattle can painted it. I borrowed, a set of Thor motocross gear from my uncle at the time, and, you know, tried to make it as a cohesive looking, you know, uniform and bike as I could. But I mean, looking back, I think that thing has like a 20 inch top tube on it. So just tiny,
yeah,
you know, steel everything back then. Yeah. I had no idea, you know, no idea. Just, this looks fun. You know, and getting into it and going from racing, you know, motorcycles, it's just you. And then playing stick and ball sports. And I figured out through playing stick and ball sports, hey, I really don't like this team stuff because I don't like losing because somebody else screwed up.
Yep.
Or I don't like losing even though I had a great game. You know, I batted 3-for-3 and got on base 3 times, but that kid struck out and that kid struck out and that kid missed a swing and that kid missed a pass ball or whatever. So I think what drew me back to it was, okay, if I lose, it's my fault.
Yeah.
If I win, it's, you know, because of what, and even still today, like, I like that. It's like, you have to put in the work.
Yep.
You have to do the work. And if you don't do the work, don't expect the results to come because you're going to be racing people that are putting in the work. So you also have to put in the work. So it's up to you. So the individualization of it, I really like as a sport because I know, you know, with the training and everything that I do and the amount that I ride and I'm in the gym, when I get on the gate, there's a very slim chance that anybody else on that gate has worked as hard as I have away from the track, away from the bike to be ready for that moment when the gate goes down.
Yeah. Now I see you train a lot. Cause I obviously follow you on Instagram and stuff. And you're in the gym. Talk to me about your gym workout.
So that's been kind of a recent thing. Recent being the last 5 years or so. So for the first, you know, how many ever years that I raced, it was always just go to the track.
Yeah.
You know, go ride the track, go to gate practice. When I was first starting racing those first, you know, 2 or 3 years, Rockford, the gates were open. You could go ride, you know, if it was nice out. We were at the track 6 days a week.
Wow.
We were there every night after, you know, you come home from school, get your chores done, get your homework done. Boom. We'd take off. We'd go to the track. We'd ride the track till sundown.
Damn.
5-6 nights a week, every week. So I've got thousands and thousands of laps under my belt out there, just putting in the time because I'm not talented on a bike. Like I'm really not. I've never been a guy that could manual a whole rhythm section. You've never seen me jump pro sets. You know, like I don't have that innate talent, I guess, on a bike that some kids, I mean, you see them pick it up and it's like, dude, this kid's been racing 2-3 years and he's already doing things on a bike that I can't do if I try, you know, it's like, and so everything I do is just kind of like this forced muscle memory, you know, like I really have to work at it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, getting track speed and all that kind of thing like that, it was just the result of a lot of laps and a lot of work, because it just, it didn't come easy to me, and it still doesn't come easy to me. There's still things that I can't do on a bike that just is like, okay, you know, for whatever reason, you know, this just isn't happening for me. You know, I can't manual five rollers in a row. I don't know. I can manual pretty well. You know, I can double manual pretty consistently, you know, on a triple, but yeah, I've never been that, like, you won't see me, you know, at Tyler Whitfield or Ethan Popovich where those guys are manual in like whole sections. Like, that stuff blows my mind when I see it, because I still, after all these years, can't do it.
Yes.
But yeah, so I have to work really hard to get the results that I do and ride the way that I do, because it doesn't really come easy for me. So the gym thing started, when I started, you know, kind of racing nationals a little bit more seriously. And then especially after getting picked up by Alpha, because, you know, those guys were kind of a new team at the time. I think I joined the second year, of Alpha being a team, and I saw it as they're going out on a limb to sponsor me, because at the time I wasn't a NAG rider. I didn't have a NAG plate. I had gone to some nationals and had some, you know, good results, and I've always done well at Rockford, you know, with it being my home track. But I didn't want to be that guy that was on a factory team that was just barely making mains or making mains and being at the back of the pack. It's like, okay, if I'm going to put on a jersey that says factory on it, I want to be up front. And so I started going to nationals and started, you know, really hitting it. And I was finding that, you know, my track speed was there and it was good, but I was getting beat pretty consistently from the gate to the first jump, from the gate to the first turn. And after a while it was like, you know, no amount of sprints, no amount of track work is going to fix this. It just comes down to power. You are the engine. You are the motor. You have to get that bike from a dead stop up to speed. So, you know, and it's a lot easier to win races from the front than it is, you know, going through the pack. You know, some of these tracks that we race, they're really not easy to pass on. Some of them, there's no places to pass on unless you want to, you know, make a desperation attempt in the turns. And, you know, what's your success fail rate there? You know, in some of these turns, you make contact and then, you know, somebody's going down. So
yeah, you're paying skin.
Right. So I would rather just get the whole shot and just lead, you know, and not have to rely on, you know, my track speed to, you know, make moves from behind. But I mean, I can do that because I had to do it for many years. I know how to ride a turn. I know how to high low. I know how to move around the track and, you know, work my way through a pack if I need to. But it's much easier to just get the whole shot and just lead and then use that track speed to stay ahead. So the gym thing and the training in that way just came out of necessity of, you know, I'm sick of getting beat by these guys where, you know, they would beat me and they would get me by maybe a bike to the first turn. And then they would stay there the rest of the track because I had good track speed, but I just couldn't get around them. And then it was like, okay, like, and I was 175 pounds, I think, at the time, just skinny, kind of always been, you know, skinny and scrawny my whole life. That's, you know, my dad, his genetics the same way, you know, he graduated high school at like 165 pounds. So I've never, you know, been a muscle guy. I just kind of been a string bean. And I had never lifted weights and I had never trained and, never really enjoyed it. Like I remember having to do it for football, in high school, you know, mandatory gym days and just didn't really enjoy it. But I had never really done it with any sort of consistency. And I remember I went to, I think it was like Louisville, indoor and got second, like all weekend long behind one guy who just managed to beat me, you know, to the first turn all weekend long. And it's like, okay, this sucks. And it's like, all right, time to get something to, you know, training plan together. And so I told myself, you know, give it like 3 months and be militant about it.
Yeah.
But get in the gym and work. No excuses. Go on days even when you don't want to, and just force yourself to go into it. And I did. And I started going and I stuck with it. And then it became an addiction of sorts because I started seeing results on the track.
Yep.
And then I started seeing results in the gym and I started seeing results in the mirror, and it all kind of snowballs together. And it's like, okay, this is actually kind of fun. And this is cool because this works, you know, like this is making sense. And so, you know, when you rip a hole shot, you know, with, you know, a full gate of guys at a national, and you are the lead dog, man, that's an addicting feeling. And that feels really good. And so when you're in the gym and you're grinding out, you know, that eighth or 10 set of squats and it sucks and, you know, your legs are burning, but it's like, you know what you're doing it for. And it's that feeling right there, you know, you're ripping that hole shot.
Yeah.
And, you know, getting that win. And yeah. So since, you know, I don't know, I think 5 or 6 years ago now, started at like 175 pounds. So my race weight, I guess, this year has been 225.
Oh shit. Are you serious?
Yeah. I got up to 240 this past winter.
You was eating a lot.
Yeah. I went like full like beefcake mode.
Okay. I feel you.
So I do like powerlifting style training. Yeah. So a lot of like really heavy, you know, doubles and singles, and it just, it's fun. I don't know. I enjoy it, and it's become like this second sport that I kind of enjoy doing. And it happens to be super beneficial to BMX. So it makes it really easy to go to the gym because I look forward to it. I enjoy it. So it all just kind of works together.
You know, it's funny you say that because I'm that type of person. I actually like to lift weights. I love doing squats, front, back squats. But I haven't been in a minute because I've got a janky left hamstring that I'm trying to get together. But as soon as that thing is healed, I will be right back in the gym. Because you see it, once you continue to work at it, all of a sudden you go to a race and wait a minute. Oh, I just came out the gate with so-and-so. And after the race, hey man, that was a hell of a start. I like that, you know? So you do get to see it. That's awesome, man.
Yeah. You know, within a year or two, because I think for the entire first year that I was really getting into lifting, I was just squatting.
Same here.
And that was it. It was like, okay, I need leg power. I need a squat. And so I was squatting 3-4 days a week.
Yep.
And, you know, I would do like a set of bench in between my sets, you know, of squats just because I was bored, but I never, you know, put anything more than, you know, just a, you know, a single 45, you know, whatever on the bar, 135 for bench, and never really deadlifted or, you know, anything like that. It was just squats for that first year. And yeah, it was cool to go to races, you know, and seeing guys and knowing, you know, okay, that guy used to be a guy where it would come down to whoever had the inside gate would beat the other. And then now all of a sudden it doesn't matter where he's at. I'm going to beat him.
Yes. I love that feeling, bro. I like that.
And then, you know, on some of these tracks, it's like no longer really fearing gate eight.
Yep.
You know, like, okay, I got gate eight. I'm just really going to have to, you know, put something into it. But it's like gate eight isn't a death sentence anymore, you know?
Yeah.
Depending on the track.
Yeah. You want to know, it's funny because I've never, from getting back into it, when I raced as a kid, then getting back in, I've never feared the gate eight thing. I've always felt it as a challenge because if you can get out and really hit it and get out in front from gate eight, everybody's looking at you like, what in the hell? Where did you come from? So I've never seen it as a death sentence. In fact, I take it as a challenge, man.
Yeah.
Not bad. So tell me this, what do you incorporate when you're lifting weights? Do you incorporate a lot of track work, a lot of gates, or do you do a lot of sprints? What do you prefer?
We'll be right back.
Hey, quick question for you. Are you someone who wants to be fit, healthy, and happy? And what if I told you you could get your dream body by simply just listening to a podcast? I'm Josh.
And I'm KG, and we are the hosts of the Fit, Healthy, and Happy podcast.
Listen, we get it. Fitness isn't easy. Carbs, no carbs.
Just stop, okay? It doesn't have to be that complicated. And that's why we made this podcast. We get straight to the facts so you can become your best you.
So the way to check us out is click the link in the show notes or search Fit, Healthy, and Happy podcast on any of the major podcast platforms. We'll see you soon.
So, I mean, being completely honest, I've never stuck to like a consistent sprint program. And I know like you hear the pros and, you know, some coaches and guys, you know, talk about, you know, just how important sprints are. I've never done them.
Are you serious?
Never really done them with any kind of consistency at all. I might do less than 10 sprint sessions a whole summer.
Holy cow. Now that's amazing. Yeah. I'm Monday and Wednesdays. Every Monday, I've got a notebook in my car, in my bag. And I have for every month, I have every sprint workout that I've done. And for the last, I'd say, 3 years.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's just crazy. So it's, you know, it's track work. You know, it's gate practice, Wednesday nights out at Rockford, and then, you know, Rockford races on Sundays and then nationals. And then within the last, I don't know how many ever years, mountain biking has been, huge for me. Really, really enjoying mountain biking.
Yeah.
And like a lot more each year as the years go on. So usually like Saturdays, like my day that I do the mountain biking, do some trail riding, and have a lot of fun doing that, because it's just it's an opposite from racing. Racing is more, you know, it's competition, it's adrenaline, it's stress, you know, it's results. And mountain biking is just, I'm just riding just to clear my mind.
Yeah.
Just to have fun. I'm not thinking about, you know, my scores. I'm not thinking about qualifiers. I'm just in the woods, just chilling, you know?
Yeah. So does it help you in the sense of endurance wise for BMX? Because it in a sense, it's like an interval, because you can go as hard as you can for a period of time. Does it help you with that?
I mean, I'm sure it does. I mean, you're out there riding and, you know, sweating and breathing hard. I'm sure it does help. But I guess I've never really looked at BMX in any kind of endurance sense, because especially like thinking national wise, it's like, okay, I have one lap where I have to go, you know, balls out for 30, 35 seconds. And then I've got hours break, you know? So it's like,
yeah.
Does your endurance really need to be that great? No, not really. Most of the time when I go to nationals, I do two laps, you know, like I do first go around and I do the main. I've got, you know, I've got a minute worth of riding for an entire day. What endurance? I don't need endurance, you know? So.
I'm laughing because I love the honesty. I was like, hey, dude, I do two laps. It's a minute long.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, you know, I've been excited. I just, my birthday is in November and I aged up into 36-40.
Yep.
And, you know, these last 2 years in 31, 35, it's like, man, that class is like really thinned out. Like when I first got in that class, you know, we had big groups, and then it was like, as it went on, like these last two seasons, like I had a bunch of total points. It's like, man, this sucks.
Yeah.
So, but then always seeing 36-40, like, oh, those guys have two racks. Oh, those guys have semis. Nice.
Yeah.
And man, I've yet to even have semis this year.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Not even Nashville. I think we had 9 or 11, something like that. Yeah. Not even Nashville had semis. So,
well, let me ask you this then. Moving up to 36-40, has it been difficult? Or did you slide in no problem?
It has been difficult. That's a tough class, man. My first national out the gate this year was Nashville. And I got whooped. Wow. And it was one of the more difficult nationals that I've had in a long time, because for so many years now, it's like I said, you know, with the training and the lifting and everything, like I go to a race and I feel like I can win every race that I go to.
Yeah.
And that weekend, man, it was Kinsler and Wyke and Andre, and I had nothing for those guys. And they blew my doors off. And it was like, you're in fourth. You can't even sniff third. And the rest of, you know, fifth through eighth, whatever, was well behind us. But I was on an island by my own in fourth place. And it was a weird feeling, man. Like, I'm so used to being at the front and battling and at least, you know, being in contention for the win.
Yeah.
And it was like, whew, I got some work to do if I'm going to do anything in this class. And, so it was kind of nice, you know, shout out to, Wyke, you know, going out there and getting the world one. So it was nice to see, like, hey, it's not like I'm losing to scrubs, you know, I'm losing to guys that are winning worlds. Yeah. So, and I had him first round Friday and Saturday. He was in my rack and I stayed within a bike or two of him. So it was, it's like, I'm not going slow. I just happened to not beat, you know, the fastest guy in the world.
Yes. Okay. So let me ask you this. If your first national was Nashville, what made you start late in the season for national?
Well, so it's usually not a late start for me. So Nashville is usually my second race of the year. And the first one had been the Louisville Indoor, which is in like February. And then they moved that one. And it's way out in Virginia now. So it was like, it was a 6-hour drive and now it's a 13-hour drive. It's like, okay, so that one's out the door. Then the other option is Tulsa, which I think is like the week before. It's right around that same time, but it's like, man, Tulsa, that's 10 hours. You know, it's like, I liked that Louisville one because it was 6 hours. Like that was a good, and I've never flown to a race ever. Never really? Flown to a race. I always drive.
Wow.
So, it's within whatever, you know, driving distance, you know, from Rockford for me, when I look at the schedule every year, and I'm comfortable within, maybe 8 hours, because I like to be able to get home Sunday night, you know, after the races. So, you know, it gets beyond that 8-hour mark and it's like, yeah, I don't know. It's like, 'cause then you got to take an extra vacation day off, you know, for the day after, you know, driving in, getting home at 3 o'clock in the morning. And just as the older I get and the more the years go on and it's like, all right, I'm just not interested in doing all of that. So are you
strategic when it comes to hitting nationals?
I mean, just proximity.
Okay. That's fair.
It's not like, No, because I'm not looking at the schedule and going, okay, well, this is a B national. I think, you know, this one's going to have, you know, lesser competition. I can go sneak some easy wins. It's like, no, it's like, what's within a reasonable driving distance, you know, to home. And then, so Nashville's 8 hours. Akron this year was 6 or 7 hours. Wisconsin Rapids is 2.5 hours.
Yep.
And Rockford is home. And then I don't really have anything else on my schedule, you know, now through the rest of the year. So it's just grands. I've got my scores, you know. It's like the only thing that could improve my standings right now is wins. And it's like, okay, you know, how far am I willing to go, you know, to only a win, you know, like that's it.
Yeah.
You know, when I went up to Wisconsin Rapids, I had the 2/4 from Nashville that I needed to drop, you know, and picked up 2 wins there. So it's like, I dropped 2/4, replaced it with 2 wins. It's like, okay, I feel pretty good about where I'm sitting, you know. And then it's like, you know, it's most of the time with these, the way that the points work out, it's like, it's going to come down to grands anyways.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, so if the guy ahead of me is, you know, 100 points ahead of me, it's like, am I going to go chase, you know, 2 more scores at a national, or can I just look forward to beating him at grants?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, because if I just beat him at Grands, or if he doesn't make the main, or if he's two or three spots behind me, well, then I just passed him anyways.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm going to be at Grands. You know, it's like, so I'd just rather do it there, you know?
Not bad. Do you do anything specific for Grands in the sense of training wise, or do you just keep doing the same thing that has worked already all year?
Pretty much the same. It's just, it gets really tricky. As far as riding. So I basically now, and this is within the last 2 years, I have to pray on the weather to get our outdoor season to last as long as it possibly can, because we lost our indoor track.
Really?
We lost Elkhorn, Wisconsin. So in previous years, it was like, okay, you could ride, you could reliably count on Rockford being open into October.
Yeah.
Maybe the first week, maybe the middle of October. Mm-hmm. It depends. You know, up here in the Midwest, the weather's screwy. It depends on the year. Some years you get lucky, some years you don't.
That's right.
Some years it snows on Halloween. You know, so so in years past, it was like, okay, you could ride, you know, outdoors and keep your outdoor legs and outdoor lungs, you know, for how many ever weeks. And then you had that gap up until Grands, and hopefully it would only be like 6 weeks. Yeah. And then there was always the changeover, you know, maybe a 2 week gap between Rockford closing and Elkhorn opening up. And then I, you know, go up there and hit gate practice, you know, at least keep my gates sharp. Yeah. And that track was so small. I mean, it's not like you were going to do anything as far as, you know, keeping your legs, you know, up as far as, you know, a Grands type track, a full size track.
Yeah.
So then, yeah, it would just be, you know, gym work and, you know, maybe doing some spin bike stuff, you know, for that, you know, getting the legs going. But it's tough. It's really tough because, you know, a lot of these guys that I'm, you know, end up battling, you know, in years past, it was like, okay, I'm going to be racing, you know, Jason Morris and Chris Sutton. Those guys live in California and Arizona.
Yeah.
They're going to be riding outdoors all the way up until they leave for Grants.
Yeah.
I'm not going to see a BMX track for 6 weeks leading into the biggest race of the year. Like, like you guys don't understand how much of an advantage that is. And it's like, even when Elkhorn was open and I could go up there, that track was 500 feet long, you know, like, you aren't getting that simulation of what the Grands track is going to present. So it's tough, man. Like, and shout out big time to, you know, any of, you know, my past, you know, Midwest homeboys that have gone down there to Grands and taking care of business, because we understand and we know that, you know, going into the biggest race of the year, we probably haven't ridden a full size track, you know, in at least a month. So there's an extra layer of difficulty there. You know, it's like Grands is already hard enough as it is. Yeah. And then we're going to take away your track time, you know, for how many ever weeks leading into that. So good luck.
See, I got lucky. I got lucky because before moving back down to Florida, I'm from Minnesota. So I got to race Rum River all the way up until, you know, Grands, and then go do Grands. So I was always lucky. Man, I feel for anybody who's coming from the Midwest and doesn't have an indoor track, because it's a disadvantage. You're right.
And even, you know, like there is, we do have Steel Wheels that's over in Indiana, but for me, it's like a 2.5 hour drive. So it's not like something that I consistently can do, you know, every week, like I would when it was Elkhorn. And even then, you know, Steel Wheels, it's indoor, but you know, it's small. So again, I mean, you're not getting that, you know, full outdoor track type riding, you know, with bigger jumps and turns and, you know, lap times. You know, what's a Grands lap time? Probably, you know, an average outdoor lap time of, you know, 30, 35 seconds.
Yeah.
You know, Elkhorn, your lap was over in 13 seconds.
Damn.
Steel Wheels, your lap might be over in 20 seconds. So, so it's tough. It's tough, man.
Do you do a full state season? Do you do racing in Illinois? Do you race at all?
No, just, you know, now that they've made the one qualifier a requirement. No, not anymore. Yeah. I mean, I have hit it in the past. I think there was one year where I went into the year and I was like, you know what? I'm going to try to win every plate that I can get.
Yeah.
And I went for the state series and I did the Gold Cup and I got the NAG plate. And I did that just to, you know, cause I don't know, yeah. felt like doing it, I guess. So I got the state one and I got the Gold Cup one and I got the NAG plate. So it's like, all right. But then it's like, you know, you're spending all this time traveling, gas money, you know, entry fees, whatever. And it's like, okay, for a plate, I'm not going to run.
Yeah. Yeah.
And a lot of times too, like even, I know there's some states that have like really incredible state series. I think Minnesota is one of them.
Florida.
Florida, you know, yeah. Like their state series are like mini nationals. States around here, like, I don't know, like if I go travel to, you know, whatever track it is 2 hours away, I'm most likely not going to have my own class. It's going to be combined and it might be with 17-year-olds and 16-year-olds. So it's like,
Yeah. Is
it really a state series then? Because you're not racing, you know, your class riders within that state.
Yeah.
You're just racing your bike and whatever group happens to get formed. So, no. I mean, I did it back in the day, you know, when I first started.
Yeah.
You know, we would travel and go to Elgin and go to Plano and, you know, try to hit the qualifiers and race state finals and try to get a state plate. And I won a state title like way, way back when I first started, when I was like novice, intermediate or whatever it was. And then the one that I won a couple of years ago, but no, I just, as the years go on and I get older and it's like, you know, you race the nationals and it's like, that's the pinnacle of the competition. And, you know, that's what I want to race. You know, I want to race, you know, the best riders in my class, you know, my age group that I can, you know, and that's what I look forward to the most. It's tough after 21 years to get excited about locals.
Yeah.
About, you know, a state race. It's like, after you race a national, you know, after you go to Nashville and you're in a gate of eight, you know, and it's Friday night and, you know, under the lights and,
Yeah. You
know, Eric Grindle's announcing. And it's like, once you feel that level up there at a 10, you know, it's like, it's tough.
Understood. Okay. So here's my question. I love to ask this question to folks.
Okay.
When it comes to grands, what's your record? Do you have a good grands typically? Or has it been tough?
It has been tough.
Ooh.
It has been tough.
Talk to me.
So I didn't make it to Grands this past year. My son was born the Wednesday before Grands. He was born November 24th. And so I kind of knew the entire year last year, you know, finding out when my wife was pregnant and when the due date was. I knew the entire year, okay, I'm going to race these nationals, but we're not going to Grands because her due date was that week.
Yeah.
And it was like, my wife's like, I'm not giving birth in Tulsa. I was like, I get it. I don't blame you. You know, I'm not going to have you 9 months pregnant, you know, in a packed up truck driving down to Tulsa Thanksgiving weekend. So, you know, I raced my nationals last year and got my scores and still managed to keep my NAG plate without racing grands. So that was cool. And that was the whole plan. But the 2 years prior to that, I have 2 8s from 2 crashes. So that would have been, last year was 21. So in 20, I spun out in the gate.
Oh.
And I finally drew like an inside gate. I had 2, and I felt strong. I felt confident. I liked the track and I really felt like, okay, I've got a shot at a legit like podium here.
Yeah.
And first, you know, gate drops and then tire goes right around, my head drops, you know, just spun that first, you know, quarter, half a crank, and was trying to fight from behind. And there was two dudes battling, you know, kind of tight going into two. And the guy that was on the inside pushed the guy on the outside off the track. And so he was out in the marbles. Well, then he came to jump back in onto the track. And as he came back in onto the track, I was coming up from behind trying to make up ground. And the guy that was in front of me got spooked by him darting back in on the track. Yeah. And made a huge move, like 10 feet sideways in the middle of the rhythm section, just as I was coming up to pass him, and I ran right into the back of him. Yeah, it's, you can see the video if you go watch it. I ran just right into the back. He just cut. He turned, you know, like he saw the guy coming. He darted over, you know, not knowing I'm coming up behind him with a full head of steam, and just plowed right into the back of him. And then the year before that, I got blasted in the last turn, like T-boned, like on the exit of the turn, like really, really blasted. I was sitting in third and I would have had double podiums because I had taken third at ROC the night before. I was pretty upset about that. There's a compilation video of like Grand's crashes, and yeah, you can see me in there giving the guy the double birds after I got him on the ground.
Hey, okay.
I was mad because I knew exactly who it was because he's got a reputation for doing that kind of thing. Yeah, I was pretty mad.
Well, that's fair. No, that's fair, dude. I mean, you put all that work in, you're in third, you're going to double podium, and the dude crashes you. Yeah, I'd be mad as hell too.
And it was, you know, it was one of those, like, if I wouldn't have been there for him to bounce off of, he would have flew off the turn and landed in the first straight. I mean, it was a T-bone, you know, of the rawest sense. It, yeah. Yeah. Right. You know, it's just, I mean, I get it. Like if the guy was up from nag one and I'm in the lead, you know, and we're battling for that, but it's like, man, I'm in third, you're in fourth. Yeah. And I think after, you know, I tallied up the points, I don't think it improved his standings like at all. So it's just like, what are you doing?
I don't know, man.
But yeah, so didn't go last year and the two previous years, I ended up in the dirt. So, yeah. Not a good run. I think the best that I finished was actually, so then the year before that, so it would have been 18, 17 yep. or 18, 18. Whatever year it was, 18, I got fourth.
Not bad.
So I think fourth is my best finish. And then I've also got like a sixth, a seventh, you know, and then an eighth. So fourth is my best finish. I was lined up, you know, to hit third that year. So not the greatest track record with Grands.
Yeah.
But I do enjoy the race. You know, and I look forward to it every year.
Yeah.
Look forward to going down there and competing and, you know, racing, you know, the best guys in the class.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, tell me this. How did the Alpha ride come about?
So, man, so this has been 5 or 6 years ago now. I think I started seeing their posts, like on like my Explorer page on Instagram, seeing their frames, and you know, they were a new team and just getting started. And I think they had put up a post for, you know, we're taking submissions, you know, to fill our team. And I was like, well, hell, you know, what have I got to lose, you know, and, you know, put it in. And I think I had like a Hookit account and at that time. And it was nice because there was like a one click button on your Hookit account, to create like your rider resume, like with your scores and everything. So it was super easy. And then, so I sent that off and, honestly didn't think I was going to, you know, hear anything from them. And, they reached out and it just kind of started from there, you know. I don't really know that there's a lot to it to be said. I mean, I didn't know those guys. They didn't know me. I mean, like I said, I had done some national racing, and then just kind of riding on my own at that point. I think I was just starting to get back to it, and starting to really hit nationals. I think I came back in 2010 and came back. But when I came back, I reclassified as intermediate because I'd been off my bike and away for 3 years. So I have a 3 year gap in there. So I play bass.
Yeah.
And I used to do music pretty seriously. I toured professionally for 3 years as a touring musician.
Wow.
So I didn't ride at all from 2007, 2009, 2010. And came back and, you know, missed it and wanted to get back into it. Came back on a 20 inch, you know, funny enough, came back on a 20 inch, reclassified to intermediate, got my wins back. And so that's actually how I started racing cruiser was when I came back, I think I was 26 or 27 and, you know, got my wins back from intermediate, but then it's like, okay, cool. Now you're racing 1927X. Good luck. You know, it's like at that time, you know, fastest class in BMX, you know, the way that 1720 is today.
Yeah.
I'm racing a bunch of kids that, you know, like still live at home with their parents. Like at that point, like I was married, I got a daughter, I got a mortgage payment. Like, so I like doing this and this is fun, but
yeah,
these kids are ruthless and reckless and fast. And it's like, well, hey, you know that cruiser's 26 to 30, right? And I was like, okay, that sounds a little better. So then I got a cruiser and then I still was racing, you know, 20 inch. I would race cruiser at like Friday night, like the pre-race before the national. Yeah. And race 20 inch Saturday, Sunday. And then yeah, just was like, okay, cruiser feels better because it feels, you know, it's more guys my age and
yep.
You know, my speed for, you know, take that for whatever you will, instead of 1927X. And then, yeah, started racing cruiser then. And then it was almost like a comedy of errors, like one thing after another. So with riding cruiser, the reason I don't do both bikes is I can't ride both bikes. They feel so different to me.
Yeah.
That I feel like such a squid. So if I like I have a 20 inch,
yeah,
fully built, my, you know, factory alpha all built out.
Yeah.
Onyx, you know, shout out to them. Answer, full build.
Yeah.
If I just grab my 20 inch and I go to the track and I ride it, I'm fine. I can't go back and forth between the two bikes one lap to the other.
Oh, okay.
The weight distribution, the balance point, it's all different and I can't get comfortable between the two.
Yeah.
So my plan for several years was I'm going to race cruiser the first half of the year, get my scores, and then race 20 inch.
Yeah.
Get scores on my 20 inch enough to where I could get a nag plate without racing at Grands and then just race cruiser at Grands.
Yeah.
And one year after another, it was like the first year I thought of doing that, I broke my wrist in Nashville. So then I was out. I think the year later, I broke my leg.
Ow.
In Louisville. The year after that was the year that Cam Wood joined our team. And we were having problems with our frame builder and we couldn't get frames. And I just told Shane, I was like, look, he can have my frame. Like, I'm not riding it. I don't plan on, you know, racing 20 inch. You know, just get me a, you know, a frame, you know, whenever the next build comes around. So I tore my 20 inch down, boxed it up and sent it to Cam Wood. So that was the frame that Cam Wood was riding that year that he was riding for us. And then, so it was like one thing after another, like every year. So it's like, I've been meaning to ride both bikes. I've been, you know, like that's been the plan. It just has never worked out for one reason or the other. So then now my next venture is I'm going OS20. I'm going to the dark side. Cause that seems to be, you know, the more people that I talk to, that seems to be the answer. It seems to be that stopgap between the 20 inch and the cruiser to make that transition between the two bikes a little bit easier. So yeah, I'm going to the cheater bikes.
understood. So let me go back to something, because you mentioned it, and I've seen it on your Instagram, and that's the music.
Yeah.
When did you start playing bass?
The same year I started racing BMX, actually.
Wow. So you've been playing a long time.
Yeah. So playing bass predates BMX by 6 months.
Wow.
So I got my bass for like my 15th birthday. Yep. And I started in November. So then that next Mother's Day is when I started racing BMX. Yep.
Wow. So you've been playing all that time, and then you go and you tour for 3 years. Who did you tour with, and how did that come about? I mean, you just don't just go tour with anybody.
So I toured with a band called 12 Stones.
Yeah.
They're a Christian rock band. They were signed to Wind Up Records, the same label as Creed and Evanescence and Three Doors Down. I met them through a girl that I was dating at the time. She had worked in the industry doing like tour managing and merch and kind of things like that. And I met her because I was playing in a local band. I had an original band here in town, and we would play a lot of shows and travel, and met her at a show. We were playing with another band that she was friends with that she had known. And so kind of just, you know, through the grapevine, whatever, and just had a conversation one night, and things weren't going that great with the band that I was in locally at the time. And I wasn't writing, and, you know, music was all I was doing at that time. And I said, hey, you know, I want to do this, you know, full time. I want to go on the road. I've got, you know, pro equipment, and I feel like I've got the talent and the skills. And they had an opening, and they needed a touring bassist, and it just kind of all, for whatever reason, just kind of fell into place. And they called me one night and said, hey, you know, if you're serious, you know, we need somebody like tomorrow.
Wow.
And so I had talked to them, you know, through email and whatever for a couple months prior, and I went and bought their CDs and sat down and in my room with my little practice amp and taught myself all their music. And so I knew everything, and they had sent me their set list to, you know, the songs to really focus on learning, and I learned them. And they said, yeah, you know, they had another bassist at the time, and they literally got into a fight, and they're like, yeah, that guy's gone, he packed up his equipment. But they were in the middle of a tour, like they had just released an album, so they're like just getting ready to hit the ground running full steam ahead, and then now they don't have a bassist. And so I happened to, and I think they had a feeling that things, you know, were going to go sideways with that guy.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, when I kind of started talking to him. So they kind of had me on the back burner, I guess. Yeah. And the door opened up, and I drove overnight down to Knoxville, Tennessee, and played a show with them that next night. I'd never played with those guys. They had never heard me play. They had never seen me play. They basically were going off of my girlfriend's, you know, word at the time, where she's like, no, yeah, he's legit. He can play. They were taking her word for it, and jumped on the bus and spent the next 3 years doing that.
Okay. So how was the tour like? Did you enjoy it, or was it a bit much?
Man, it is, it's cool. It is cool. I'm glad that I did it. It was definitely an experience. It's something that, you know, 99% of musicians, you know, aspire to do and never get the chance to. So I was very lucky, you know, to be able to do it at that level where, you know, you're on a tour bus and you have a road crew that, you know, sets up and tears down your equipment. And, you know, you get to play some really, really cool shows, and you get to meet a lot of really cool people. But it does get to a point to where it's like, okay, this is still a job and this is still work. And much like, you know, any other job, there's days where it's like, I don't want to be here. I want to go home. I want to sleep in my own bed. I want to see, you know, my family. whatever the case may be. Yeah, you miss a lot. You know, you're gone for months and months at a time.
Yeah.
And yeah, but it is cool. It is cool. It was fun. It was fun to do while I was, you know, 22, 23, 24, 25 years old, you know, with, you know, really not a ton of responsibility, you know, not a ton going on. Yeah, it was cool to do for that time. I'm glad I did it. You know, I wouldn't take it back, but would I go back out there and do it now? Hell no. No way. No way.
Do you still play?
Yeah. I mean, I've still got, I've still got some equipment. Yeah,
I guess you do.
Yeah. I mean, if I needed, you know, to go play a show tomorrow, I still have, you know, enough equipment. I don't have all the same stuff that I did back then, but yeah, I still play every once in a while. You know, you just get busy with life and whatever. Like I said, my son was just born, so he's 8 months old now, and that, you know, that takes up a lot of time. And my daughter is 16, you know, she's getting ready to start her senior year of high school, and my wife, and then, you know, you have a career, and then juggling, you know, racing and riding bikes and mountain bikes. And it's like, it all gets to be a lot. So I don't play not nearly as much as I used to, you know. Yeah. I used to play for hours a day, and yeah, it's like now I might play an hour a month.
Ooh,
yeah. Yeah. But I still love music. You know, everything I do, you know, I'm constantly listening to music in the gym, you know, in the car, whatever, riding all the time. So yeah, music is definitely a huge thing for me. We were at a show last night, me and my wife. We went to a concert down in Chicago last night. So yeah. Definitely still a big part of my life. Just not, you know, the playing and performing and, you know, band life like it used to be.
Yeah. Okay. Last couple of questions here, and they're quick ones here because I'm curious if you. All right.
Okay.
So
okay.
The first one is this: if Sean Wade had unlimited budget, if you could race any track in the world, where would you go? And it's a two part now. Who would you bring with you?
Oh, hell, I don't know. I don't know.
Any track.
I don't know.
You're the first one I've stumped so far.
Yeah, I don't know. Who would I bring with me? Man, that's tough. I don't know. Where would I?
That's stumped, huh?
I would call my buddy Olajuwon.
Okay. Okay.
Olajuwon Davis. Shout out OD.
Yep. OD, what's up, buddy?
So I've known OD as long as I've been racing BMX.
Wow.
So OD is the same age as my younger brother. My younger brother also raced. And so OD used to be at our house all the time. And when we would travel to these different races and stuff, OD would come with us.
Wow.
So I've known Olajuwon for 21 years. So I would grab OD and I would ask him.
Okay.
Because he's done a lot more traveling than I have, you know, being a pro and racing, you know, the whole circuit. I'd say, hey, where are we going? You tell me where we're going.
Okay. Okay. I'm trying to get him on here. So I will definitely ask him that question and reference you.
Okay. All right. Okay.
All right. So the last question here is, it's one that I think is needed. Sean Wade, are you blessed? Yes or no, and why?
Blessed. It feels wrong to say no, but maybe I'm thinking about it wrong. Blessed, yes, through virtue of hard work. I'm a very big believer in hard work.
Yes, sir.
if you put your nose down and you put in the work, good things are going to come. And a lot of what I have, a lot of my successes, where I'm at in life, and I'm blessed to have those things, has been through virtue of hard work. A lot of time, a lot of dedication, you know, hard work, whether it be, you know, getting a degree, you know, getting married, working hard, you know, to get to where we're at in our lives, and to have the things that we have and enjoy the life that we do, that we are blessed indeed to those things, through virtue of hard work, because none of this has come easy. None of where I live, this house that we just bought, the cars that we drive, the jobs that we have, you know, paying our bills, you know, whatever, you know, vacations we take, concerts we go enjoy, whatever it may be, indeed blessed to have those things, but none of it's been given, you know. Race wins, you know, hole shots, nag plates, sponsorships, none of it's come easy. Am I grateful and blessed? Yes. Through virtue of hard work.
I like that. Thank you, Sean Wade, for talking to me on the Lane 8 BMX podcast, dude. You did a hell of an interview, and it's fun. It's great to finally get to speak to you. I've seen the pictures, but to finally be face to face with you. Thank you for giving me the time, brother.
Well, I appreciate you having me on. Like I said, I when you sent me the message, I was like, okay, I'm thinking, well, why would he want to talk to me? I don't really know that anybody knows me, I guess. Nah. I don't. Are there little kids out there who know who I don't think so. I don't know.
Come on, man.
So it's like, I look at the list of the other names, and it's like, I'm looking at these other names, and it's like, okay, Alec Bob and, you know, Tyler Klumper. And I'm looking at these other names and I go, okay, these are, you know, really well-known popular riders who, you know, get, you know, cheers and have fan base. Is anybody out there cheering on Sean Wade? I don't know. I don't think so.
I'm cheering you on. You want to know something?
I appreciate that. Thank you.
I've had a lot of people tell me, man, your list of people that you've talked to is all over the place. And I hate to say this and beat a dead horse dead, but I only interview people that I find interesting, and everybody has a story. And I was curious, from following you for so long, what is your story? And that story may inspire somebody else. So there you go.
Okay. Fair enough.